This week in KMA Land, more info and debate on Page County Solar Project. Page County Jail Project nears partial occupancy. Council Bluffs Council nixes data center moratorium. More discussion, no action on Montgomery County Auditor's Assistant. Tornadoes confirmed in KMA Land from June 11 storm. And special events in Clarinda and Shenandoah. I'm Mike Peterson. A proposed solar project was still a hot topic this week in Page County, no pun intended. At its regular meeting late Tuesday afternoon, the Page County Board of Supervisors discussed its current solar ordinance and previewed an upcoming meeting hosted by MidAmerican Energy June 30th at 4 p.m. at the Clarinda Country Club covering the proposed Nottoway Valley solar project. Plans call for a 50-megawatt solar farm on roughly 350 acres northeast of Clarinda. This week's discussion followed last week's meeting at which MidAmerican Energy officials informed the board the company had applied for a generating certificate from the Iowa Utilities Commission for the project. On Tuesday, Supervisor Todd Maher reiterated his concerns that the state process would circumvent the county's ordinances.
It makes county ordinances really not important if they're going to end up bypassing what the counties and their constituents have voted on, or at least get their representatives have voted on for the citizens of the county. So
board members indicated Tuesday they had received suggestions from MidAmerican on possible changes to the county's existing solar ordinance. After nearly a year's worth of discussions, the board passed its current solar ordinance in December 2024. Indicating he wants to work with MidAmerican, Maher says he also wants to ensure that some of the county ordinances are maintained.
I would just ask that everybody be open-minded to some of the things and not just go with what MidAmerican is asking us to do, I guess. So, you know, we can work on some stuff. We can compromise if we need to on some other things. But I just don't want us to throw in the towel and lose our own governance.
Maher added he received some calls over the past week expressing concern about agricultural land being taken out of production for solar projects. However, Supervisors Chair Judy Clark says landowners still have control over what goes on their land.
It's not up to us to say what people can do with their land.
No, I get that.
If it is land that's taken out of production, that's up to the individual landowner.
Sure.
So I think that's, you know, when you're thinking about eminent domain, this is kind of like that. If you're saying they can't do it because we don't like it, we don't like solar, we need to be very careful.
All three board members indicated the solar ordinance and MidAmerican suggestions will be further discussed at a future meeting. Board members also plan to hold their regular meeting on June 30th at 3:10 p.m. to accommodate the solar project meeting. Portions of Page County's new law enforcement center are nearing partial occupancy. Samuels Group spokesman Chris Falk updated the Page County Board of Supervisors late Tuesday afternoon on continuing construction of the roughly 19,600-square-foot facility, which includes a new county jail, the sheriff's office, and 911 dispatch, or PageCom. Falk says all of the roof and trim on the building are complete with a few minor touches remaining, and work on the building's entry vestibule is also progressing. He adds the majority of the grading work outside the facility has also been completed. On the interior, Falk says work is hitting the home stretch, particularly on the non-detention side of the facility.
There's a lot of flooring already installed, but now they're polishing concrete right now. They're applying epoxy flooring in the kitchen, laundry areas, back in the showers and detention. A lot of the wiring's done. Fire alarm is installed. Sprinkler system is installed up front.
Falk says the state fire marshal is expected to inspect the building Monday. Barring any complications from that inspection, Falk says partial occupancy will be granted for the dispatch center.
So another big milestone. Tony's had some ICN up there working, getting that networking in for the dispatch. And then I know he's got telecommunications as well as internet going in too. So that's all happening. All the security stuff's happening in the IT room too for dispatch. So when they do move in, we have a secured building for them to work out of.
He notes materials for the bathrooms were expected to arrive this week or next. Falk says interior work is also in the final stages of the detention side of the facility.
Back in booking, All the frames are installed, everything's painted, all the cabinets are installed, the ceilings are grid is in, they've got everything deviced out, they're putting in lighting back there, and then they'll finish putting in the rest of the ceiling. We have all the detention frames in back in the jail. The doors are hung, hardware's on. They're just now painting back there the frames.
Once the painting is finished, Falk says floor furnishings will be finalized before moving in all the furniture. Falk says any punch list items will be addressed in a walkthrough of the facility next month. Council Bluffs officials this week said no to a temporary pause on new data center projects in the city. At a special meeting Monday afternoon, the Council Bluffs City Council unanimously rejected a proposed year-long moratorium on future data center projects within city limits. Mayor Jill Schudak requested the proposed moratorium after conversations with city staff to allow more time to review the city's existing regulations and zoning requirements for data centers, which were first defined in the city zoning ordinance in 2007, and adopt a comprehensive ordinance addressing data center development. Schudak emphasized during the meeting that the temporary halt would have only been for future or new projects rather than those currently in progress.
So this would affect anything that has not started or come to the council yet to review. And I think that it's important that we take this pause so we can look at things like the community benefits agreement, that we can take a look and see where is our capacity for water and for sewer. We have ran... We're running very high at capacity at both water and sewer.
Multiple council members, including Douglas Rue, expressed concerns about the economic impact of placing a moratorium. Rue says while the moratorium would be temporary, it could make Council Bluffs appear closed off to developers.
They see a red stop sign and say, that's what we're going to do. And I'm not sure that's the message as a community that we would want to send right now, that we're not open for business. The message I want to send is, we're open for every business that wants to come in here and look. We'll decide whether it makes sense through what we already have in place, and we may have to make some adjustments. We've already talked about that. I think we can certainly do that.
Schudak says city staff have been requesting a moratorium to give the city time to review potential zoning law revisions specific to data centers and their impact on local energy and wastewater infrastructure. Public Works Director Matt Cox says they often face aggressive timelines for data center-type projects, and feels a more uniform approach could be taken for future proposals.
When a project like this comes in, this is how we respond. It's the same for everyone. I think that would be helpful because it would make us more responsive to them. At least they know where they stand. They're not guessing. It's not always a negotiation. You know, when we negotiate every project independently, I do think it's a drain on resources, and I also think it's an unpredictability for the group that's developing, because it's based on the deal.
And more specifically, Cox says the city is nearing its wastewater capacity. He compared the usage of a large project like a data center to that of roughly 4,000 residential homes. Cox says part of the reason that those types of projects will want to come to Council Bluffs is the city's water source in the Missouri River. Montgomery County officials are still undecided on whether to hire an additional employee in the county auditor's office. More discussion, but no action, took place at Tuesday's County Board of Supervisors meeting on creating a part-time budget, finance, and human resource directors or clerk's position at up to 30 hours per week. As requested by the board at last week's meeting, County Auditor Jill Ozuna presented information regarding the amount of overtime hours she and her employees accrue, audit firm expenses, and the statutory and non-statutory duties her office handles. Ozuna says the additional employee would address the non-statutory duties causing overtime hours to increase.
What I want assistance with this part-time person, are you the board, is payroll and benefits support, HR and onboarding support, financial accounting functions, accruals, depreciation and forecasting assistance, including data entry, website posting and communications, board and committee letters and appointments, assistance with all of that, ARPA and opioid reporting, assistance with drafting resolutions, ordinances, and policies.
Supervisor Alex Burton once again questioned the need for the position, suggesting the supervisors rushing into decision. Burton called for gathering more information from other counties and exploring other options available.
There's more than one way to get to what's needed, and it may not be exactly the path that Jill has outlined. Again, it could be contracting with somebody to get through the current stuff till it bounces out, and then we can look at next year. Or it may be some other totally different thing that we haven't discussed. It could be restructuring how we assign duties to different departments. It could be something totally different. But we haven't actually taken the time to look at what the issue is deeply and then look at the options for the solution.
Supervisor Bryant Amos suggested the person hired could assist other county departments. County Treasurer Jackie Porter says the additional staffer could help her office address issues outlined in the county's fiscal 2025 audit report.
This new person, if they're going to help Jill and I both out, I believe that the state auditor is wanting someone to come in to my office and count driver's license monies, motor vehicle monies, at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day, maybe look at investments with me as far as CDs go, things like that, and bank reconciliation.
After further discussion, the supervisors agreed to delay a decision for 2 weeks when Supervisor Mark Peterson returns to the boardroom. Calls for an expanded Mills County Board of Supervisors are heard this week. At its regular meeting Tuesday, County resident Chris Whitey requested that the supervisors draft a resolution to place a ballot question on the November 2026 general election ballot on whether to increase the board from 3 to 5 members. Under Iowa law, the board can approve the resolution on its own to place the question before voters, or a citizen's petition with a necessary amount of verified signatures can force a similar vote. Whitey, who spoke as a member of the Mills County Matters Working Group, says while expanding the board might not solve all the county's problems, they want to give county voters the option.
We recognize that this is a very difficult and sensitive issue. In fact, not everybody on our own working group feels it will actually solve the problems. So, but the majority of our members would like this to be on the ballot.
Based on state requirements, Whitey says a petition would need around 850 verified signatures from county voters to force the ballot question. Supervisors Chair Richard Crouch says one potential drawback is finding enough qualified candidates to serve in government, particularly if they live in certain districts. Supervisor Jack Sayre says he would work up a possible resolution with County Election Clerk Katie Dodge for next week's regular meeting for further discussion. An investigation is underway into an officer-involved shooting in Red Oak this week. Ethan Hewitt has the story.
In a press release Thursday afternoon, the Red Oak Police Department says shortly before 8 p.m. Wednesday, officers were dispatched to 905 Highland Avenue for a reported welfare check. Upon arrival, authorities say officers made contact with the occupant of the residence. Well, during the encounter, police say the individual exited the residence and fired multiple rounds from a handgun in the direction of a police officer positioned a short distance away before the suspect raised the handgun in an apparent attempt to fire additional shots at the officer. In response to the immediate and ongoing threat, authorities say a Red Oak police officer discharged his service weapon, striking the suspect. Police say the suspect was provided emergency medical treatment at the scene by Red Oak Fire Department personnel. The individual was taken to the Montgomery County Memorial Hospital and later airlifted to the University of Nebraska Medical Center for further treatment. As of Thursday afternoon, authorities say the suspect is reported in stable condition. Police say the identities of the involved officer and the suspect are not being released at this time due to an ongoing investigation by the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. Additional information will be released as it becomes available. The Red Oak Fire Department, Montgomery County Emergency Management, Montgomery County Sheriff's Office, and Iowa DCI assisted with the incident. Ethan Hewitt reporting.
Clarinda celebrated a new era for economic development in the community this week. Groundbreaking and dedication ceremonies took place late Thursday morning on the Hugh and Maxine Loudon Business Park in the south end of Clarinda, situated along the U.S. Highway 71 and Highway 2 bypass. Roughly 60 acres of land next to AgriVision Equipment and AgriLand FS Clarinda were donated to the city by the Loudon family for future economic development. City officials and community members reflected on the donation and the Loudon family's impact on the community. Clarinda Mayor Craig Hill says the project begins a new chapter for the community, representing a vision, partnership, and confidence in the future of Clarinda.
The Hugh and Maxine Loudon Business Park will provide a place where local businesses can expand, new businesses can invest, workers can build a new career, and where future generations can come and find opportunities closer to home. This park sends a clear message Clarinda is open for business, ready to grow, and a commitment to the building of the future.
Clarinda City Council took out roughly $3.5 million in general obligation corporate purpose bonds to install the necessary infrastructure, including roads, water and sewer, and street lighting, ultimately creating over 20 lots for future development. John Beyer is past president of the Clarinda Economic Development Board and worked with Hugh Loudon in the local banking industry. Beyer says the Loudon's impact on the community dates back to connections that Hugh Loudon developed while serving as an aide to Congressman Otha Warren from 1937 to 39.
His Washington contacts would later prove useful in helping Clarinda obtain a matching grant to build the municipal hospital in 1939 and getting the POW camp located here in Clarinda during World War II. So way back then, Hugh was already at work for Clarinda, often behind the scenes.
Both Clarinda High School graduates, Hugh and Maxine Loudon, passed away in 2008 and 2012. But Beyer says their legacy has been kept alive by the family, including their daughter Lynn Dodd, by contributing to a variety of projects in the community through the Loudon Estate.
In 2023, Lynn worked through the estate and contributed a very large gift of $750,000 to the Clarinda Regional Health Center, which was used to help develop and construct a state-of-the-art operating room. And then the icing on the cake, then Lynn donating this prime parcel of land to be used as a business park to benefit Clarinda for economic development.
Also on Thursday, the Iowa Economic Development Authority formally announced the business park had earned the Iowa Certified Site designation, indicating the property had undergone the necessary environmental and infrastructure assessments. Clarinda Economic Development Corporation Executive Director Amy McQueen says the designation, supported through the Iowa Rural Certified Site Initiative, helps make the site more attractive to prospective businesses.
This means that the due diligence work has been completed, and once infrastructure is in place, the site will be shovel ready. That certification makes the park more attractive to site selectors, and we are proud that it's one of the very first rural sites in the state of Iowa.
The project was awarded a roughly $30,000 grant through the IEDA program to help offset the certification cost. Plans call for infrastructure work, which also includes turning lanes off the bypass, to be complete by the end of the calendar year. Feedback on a variety of issues was gleaned at a special event in Shenandoah. City officials joined the Southwest Iowa Planning Council in hosting a community meeting late Thursday afternoon at the Shenandoah Public Library's auditorium. Danny Briggs is a community development specialist and lead planner with SWPCO. Briggs tells KMA News the public meeting was part of the city's process of revamping its comprehensive plan. She says that plan must be revised every 5 years.
A comprehensive plan is necessary for zoning for cities. It lays the foundation. So any changes done to the zoning ordinance should follow what is laid out in the comprehensive plan. So it's a very important document. It's a legal document. It's established under Iowa code. So it's necessary for a city this size to have one.
During the meeting's first portion, residents provided input during an open house session on the city's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Briggs says comments received were similar to those provided in an online survey made available since April.
Some strengths were the medical center, the schools, the community college, downtown hotel was mentioned as a strength. Some opportunities, we have an inflow of construction workers and hunters to the area that can provide some boost to the economy during certain times of the year. But so far, it mostly matches up with what's been said on the survey.
Weaknesses listed included the city's water situation, a perceived lack of communications from city government, and apathy. Threats indicated included property management. Changes residents want to see include more craft shows and restaurants, better communications, more parks in the city's north side, and an outdoor amphitheater. Part two entailed a presentation in which Briggs reviewed some of the community results gleaned thus far. Among the many questions, Briggs says the survey asked respondents what they liked and disliked about Shenandoah.
People enjoy living in Shenandoah. It's small, it's quiet, it's safe. You know, it has that hometown feel. They like the downtown area, but they have talked about the water issues, lack of jobs, neglected properties, poor sidewalks and spots.
Briggs says the survey also asked residents to describe Shenandoah in one word.
So we had cozy, it's friendly, it's home, it's quaint. It's clicky. It's limited, declining.
Briggs hopes to have the comprehensive plan's final draft released to the public and the city's Planning and Zoning Commission in August. Well, more information was released this week on the horrific storms touching off tornadoes in the early morning hours of June 11th. National Weather Service officials confirmed 9 twisters touching down in KMA land. The first was an EF1 touching down a mile north-northeast of Weeping Water, Nebraska at around 5:10 a.m., staying on the ground 4 minutes and traveling 2 miles. A weaker EF0 twister landed 3 miles east of Weeping Water in Cass County at around 5:15 that morning, staying on the ground for about a minute and traveling less than a mile. At approximately 5:21 a.m., a brief tornado developed northeast of Nehaka near 12th Street and Becker Drive and moved southeast. On the ground for 4 minutes and traveling for approximately 4 miles, the tornado caused fairly extensive tree damage at a residence with several broken tree branches. Tornadic activity then moved into Fremont County when a twister developed 4 miles west of Thurmont. Fremont County Emergency Management Coordinator Clayton Long tells KMA News the tornado touched down at around 5:29 a.m. and left damage in its wake.
It tracked for a mile and a half and was about 30 yards wide. Fortunately, there's not very many structures out there. It's a lot of farm ground on that bottom. So there were some signs of tree damage, and then there is a structure that was ultimately affected, but it's a new home under construction, so it wasn't occupied. And so it tore the roof off and some of the walls off that.
Long says other non-tornadic damage took place in at least 2 communities.
Tracking east a little bit into the town of Thurmont, there was extensive tree damage, primarily the south end of town. Those residents and crews would have worked all weekend to get those pieced up. As the storm made its way through, I was watching on radar on the imaging area showed readings of 114 mile an hour winds. They had some trees down in town and surrounding rural properties out there.
Then there was the surplus rainfall causing at least 2 road closures.
That led to some undermining of a bridge, rural Thurmont area, 240th Avenue, where it washed out the side of the bridge. And so we've got that road closed off until that can be rehabilitated, inspected, ensure safety of the public again.
A flooding also forced the closing of 250th Street west of Riverton, though that road later reopened. Another EF0 twister touched down 5 miles northwest of Tabor in Mills County at around 5:33 a.m., tracking less than 2 miles and causing sporadic tree damage before lifting 2 minutes later. 2 tornadoes touched down in Page County, one of which was reported at 5:58 a.m., 4 miles east-southeast of Coburg. Tracking 7 miles within an 8-minute lifespan, the EF1 twister damaged both trees and farm outbuildings. Trees and outbuildings were also destroyed by an EF1 tornado touching down 3 miles south of Villisca at 6:11 that morning, lasting 2 minutes and tracking less than 2 miles. Perhaps the most destructive tornado touched down 3 miles east-southeast of Villisca at around 6:08 a.m., stretching more than 5 miles and lasting 8 minutes. The tornado caused considerable damage in and around Viking Lake and hurled grain bins from over a mile away and into the interchange of Highways 71 and 34. Weather Service officials also confirmed an EF2 tornado touching down at around 6:26 a.m., about 5 miles southeast of Corning. Lasting roughly a minute and spanning 200 yards, officials say the tornado carved a 6-mile-long path, tracking northeast, producing peak winds of 115 miles per hour and causing significant damage. Officials also confirmed that a squall line that pushed across the region brought 80 to 100 mile per hour straight line winds and wind-driven hail, including in Adams County and Corning, causing significant tree damage as well as crop damage on that morning. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.